The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Armageddon came to the GOP in Virginia last night, and quite frankly, they deserved it. The Republicans got straight crushed as Ralph Northam defeated Ed Gillespie for governor, and probably more significantly, Democrats picked up 10 seats in the state legislature. Now, if you've been watching this in the past few weeks on the news, you'd think whichever party performs better in this election is going to win every election until the end of time. Uh-huh. Democrats have lost every special election up until this point. They have done that despite pouring records amount of cash into it. So why is there so much hype on this election? Gillespie lost. But that was, you know, as predictable as making the bold claim that I think tomorrow the sun is going to come up. And I'm going to actually put some more, I'm going to risk some more. It's going to come up in the east. With an exception of 2013, the sitting president's party has lost every Virginia gubernatorial election since Jimmy Carter. On top of that, Trump lost Virginia to Hillary and the state went to Obama twice. The narrative this morning is that this is the beginning of the end times for the GOP. But this would have been a much bigger deal had the Democrats performed poorly. Republicans were supposed to do poorly here. There's a much bigger story on Virginia, because Virginia is the prime example of the increasing shift of people and states moving to the far fringes of the left and the right. Red states are getting redder. Blue states are getting bluer. The moderates and the middle ground are disappearing. Virginia has been turning blue for a while now. But the most eye-popping thing you will see on the map is that the urban areas have turned so blue and rural areas have turned so red that it almost drains the red and blue cones from your eyes. Where have the moderates gone? This is a trend that is going to continue to pick up steam as people continue to shift further and further left and right until we have an unum again. E pluribus unum. This will continue to happen until we decide what we're for, not just what we're against. Consider what's happening in Virginia. This is a state that just elected a governor that was endorsed by Planned Parenthood. They also elected their first openly transgender to the legislature. And they elected a self-proclaimed socialist. Okay, that sounds moderate. The midterms are still a year away, and anything is possible. The GOP either needs to up their game, or here's an idea, show up with a game, or somehow try to get Hillary Clinton on every single ballot next year. But either way, whether you live in a blue county or a red county, get ready, because everyone around you is going to move further in that direction.
It's Wednesday, November 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Stu, give me a roundup on everything that happened yesterday.
Well, I mean, you know, it was there was an outside hope, I think, for Republicans to do pretty well in Virginia. Gillespie had run previously.
I don't know anybody who was actually feeling that. I've heard people say, "Well, there's a." I don't know anybody who actually believed that.
Well, I mean, you know, the polling was pretty close. I mean, Gillespie was pretty close in the polls leading up to it. He had run well previously in a statewide election and almost won. He did much worse last night. I am kind of with you in that I did not expect him to win.
Yeah, and I talked about it last night at 6 o'clock, and we were both just looking at each other going, there's not a chance. I mean, yes, there's a chance. Yeah, but there's a chance, too, that you know, quantum mechanics and the idea of a parallel universe is actually the right answer too. I'm having a hard time with it.
We've seen that play out before when it seems like it's a parallel universe.
Yes,
we're living in one now. You know, so it's interesting in that, like, you know, Gillespie ran his campaign largely under sort of the Trump policy banner. He didn't associate closely with Trump. He didn't have him campaign for him. He did do robocalls and things like that for Gillespie, but there wasn't a close association of their personalities. But he ran on a lot of the platform has been seen as Trumpian over the past few years. So as Steve Bannon was saying, he was going to win because he was saying these things. Donald Trump obviously said the same types of things, although he's a politician. I don't know how much you can take from Trump saying it. But, you know, you notice the reaction of Breitbart. I have this. So the day before the election, Corey Stewart, who was like kind of the more Trumpian candidate that ran against Gillespie initially, is the reason Gillespie's going to win, Stephen Bannon said. It's the Trump-Stewart talking points that got Gillespie close and maybe even to victory. It was embracing Trump's agenda as personified by Corey's platform. This was not a competitive race for weeks. You could have stuck a fork in Gillespie. But, of course, he did the Trump stuff, right? Breitbart today. Establishment Republican Gillespie rejected. I mean, they're so shameless. But, I mean, you know, look, it not only did he lose, he lost by a much larger margin than was expected. So the idea, pretty easily, you can jump to there's a big time problem here for Republicans, and that this is the first batch of elections that have happened since Trump got into office in which these were fought on sort of like playing grounds that Republicans and Democrats are competitive. A lot of the special election that have happened so far are people in very deep red areas that Trump picked the representative out of to put him in the cabinet. And so, you know, they wound up winning, but winning in a much closer elections than expected. Here you see the first sort of purplish state, which, again, I think is leaning blue anyway without Trump. It's a tough win for a Republican governor there anyway. But you know, you see a real underperformance than what you would expect from Gillespie.
I think it is because, honestly, what are the Republicans for? I know they're against Obamacare. What has that gotten us?
Even that is... They say they're against Obamacare. I don't know how you quantify that.
Right. But let's take them at their word. They're against that. But what have they done? They're against high taxes. Have you seen their tax plan? I am not getting out of my home and walking literally across the street to vote for a Republican who's giving me this same crap. When, on the other hand, when you have a socialist that is running, they're running socialists. Okay, we ran constitutionalist and we swept. They say that this is just to stop Trump. I don't think it is. Trump is the catalyst. And what has happened is the people who have thought, you know, we never have a chance to win, the people who are just as tired of the Democratic Party as we are of the Republican Party, they're the ones who are going out and voting. They're the ones that put a socialist in, not your regular Democrat. These are the ones who are like, I believe in something. I believe in socialism. I believe capitalism is killing us. I believe capitalism is a poison. Those are the ones who are going out and voting. Just like those who thought that socialism was a cancer and progressivism was eating away at our Constitution, those are the guys who came out for the Tea Party. What we found, however, was not everybody was really for that. Not everybody was really for the Constitution. A lot of people were just against Barack Obama. And that leads you to make all kinds of bad decisions. The same thing can be said, I think, with those who are really rallying around the socialists. Do they actually believe in hardcore socialism? My guess is yes.
Yeah, I mean, for and in, to your point, not only did they elect the first transgender person into the state legislature in Virginia, they also elected Lee Carter, a member of the Democratic Socialists, to be one.
Right.
They also elected an outspoken gun activist. If you remember the terrible video from the reporter who was killed live on television doing that, her boyfriend was elected as well on a anti-gun platform. So, I mean, they got who they wanted. The big surprise was kind of this Virginia state delegates who were, it was, I think, I believe, a supermajority for Republicans going into this election. And now it, the control of it over, it was like 66-34 going in. Now it's going to be, it looks like it could be Democratic control, which they, if they have all three of, you know, if they have that whole state controlled, then they are going to be able to pass. They're already talking about major gun legislation there in the state as well. There, you know, and the other thing I would say on this, the Trump effect is somewhat the negative side of that is going to be magnified in a state like Virginia, because remember, this is the home of Charlottesville. I mean, think of what it would be like if you don't live in Virginia. Think of what the state media has looked like since that event. I mean, as big as that was to the nation, and arguably Trump's worst moment, right, where even, you know, people in his own cabinet were coming out and criticizing the way he handled that. So that has been the dominating news event for the state for the past year. So I think you can look at Virginia and say maybe this was worse than the Trump effect in other states will be. Though everywhere across the country last night, I mean, Republicans.
Honestly, I don't think it's just the Trump effect. I really don't. I think it's the GOP effect. If the GOP would be putting things in front of the president, the GOP would be energized. Here's the thing. Trump energizes the opposition, but the GOP in Congress does not energize the base. So you have Trump. Everybody just wants to stop Trump. Do anything you can to stop Trump by any means necessary. Okay, so that's what's driving Democrats to the polls. You've got to stop this guy. But there is nothing that the GOP is doing that makes anyone who's typically voted for Republicans say, I'm going to get up and make a call, give you a dollar, spend the time to stand in line for you. There's nothing that is exciting the GOP, because there's nobody in the GOP that you think, oh, no, they get it. No, they're getting it done. There's no one. The number of Americans preparing for emergencies has soared recently, and that's a good thing. You know, I did, I opened up the TV show last night with a chalkboard, just going over just the shootings. In June, we had the baseball shooting. In August, we had the Nazi Charlottesville. In October was Las Vegas. Last Tuesday was ISIS in New York City running people over. Friday, Rand Paul was beaten within an inch of his life at his own house. Saturday, Antifa started a movement and started rallies around the country. Sunday was Sutherland Springs. Monday was the White House shooter that wanted to kill all of the white cops at the White House. Are you kidding me? Look at that. The birth pangs are getting stronger and they are getting closer and closer together. We are entering a world of absolute chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped people prepare for emergencies and chaos in their own lives for a long time, 10 years now. They have really helped me. They're the ones that I have all my food through, My Patriot Supply, starting with their 102 serving food kit right now. Now, you can get this for less than a dollar per serving. That's 102 servings. Really good food. Lasts 25 years. It's all really easily stored. And, you know, you have to get out because it's a fire, it's an earthquake, it's a flood, whatever it is, you just grab it and go. And your family doesn't have to worry about food. Call 800-271-63, or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. Dependable emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. 800-271-63 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I have a really great show for you. We are going to talk to a mom in Australia that has been trying to warn the United States and Michael Bloomberg in particular about the mosques that are here in America and riddled all around the New York area, that he said he has evidence, proof, people in the mosques are calling and saying, please help us get rid of these radical imams. And Michael Bloomberg won't do anything about it. And we'll talk to him coming up in just a little while.
And I feel like today, after the election results, it's easy to kind of wake up and feel that you're far too fully refreshed and awake from all the winning.
Yes.
I'm sick of winning. And I think that's an easy way to react today.
Yeah.
But there are some positive ways to look at this. Number one, if you are a Republican, you should all of a sudden, the fear of God should be in you that you have 1 year to do something. You have a year. You may very well lose the House in a year and you will get nothing accomplished. You have this year. Get taxes done. Get Obamacare done. Get these things done because you have a very small window to get these things done. At least there's a possibility of it. I mean, I think there's a big thought. The Senate is very well aligned for Republicans in 2018. It's very unlikely they will lose the Senate in almost any scenario. But when it comes to the House, it could go away very quickly. And it is dangerous. There are some good ways, though, more optimistic take on this. And I think you can kind of look at this and see maybe it's not as bad as the headlines are today. You know, New York Times goes over this a little bit today, talking about how the results are consistent with what could be a wave election in 2018, which is not a huge surprise if you kind of looked at the results. However, when you go at you go back and look at this, Virginia voted for Hillary Clinton by 5. And this was a 9-point win against Ed Gillespie last night for the Democrats. But if you look at the House delegates, which is kind of the big surprise, everyone thought that Republicans were going to be fine there. A lot of that came in Clinton areas. Of the 16 districts where Democrats wound up leading and going ahead in Virginia, Clinton won 15 of them. So these were already sort of,
right?
If they were anti-Trump, they were anti-Trump in 2016, too. Mm-hmm. So there might not be as huge a signal in here if you want to look at this as sort of the positive.
So what I see this as a signal of is the left, the Democrats, moving further left. You know, the idea that we're going to be able to come together as a constitutionalist and a hardcore socialist. I don't see that happening. We're losing our principles. And how do we come back together? And so when you're starting to see the hardcore left be elected, what are the Democrats going to send in?
Yeah, and they're going farther and farther left. I mean, you're seeing this. There's a real civil war here. People love to talk about all the problems in the Republican Party. The Democratic Party is in a civil war right now between the Bernie Sanders and the sort
much
of
more
end.
Than the Republicans are.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, honestly, there doesn't seem to be anybody fighting against sort of the Trump side, outside of a couple individuals. That split between sort of traditional conservatism and the establishment and the Trump wing. It's right now really not even being fought on the Republican side.
I think because people have given up and they're looking for another way.
Right. And I think
I don't care about the Democrats.
Look, Trump
or Republicans.
Won, right. And so this happens in every sport when whoever wins the Super Bowl the next year, everybody's doing what they were doing.
Yes.
You know, so it's very common that this would happen. If this stuff starts to go on where the Trump-backed people continue to lose, And if, you know, that could wind up being a problem for that movement. But I don't know that there is a movement there. I mean, again, they
I don't think the Trump, I don't, I am not concerned.
It's not a policy movement.
Yeah, I am not concerned about the Trump movement. I am concerned that he is, that people like Steve Bannon are taking this politically much further to the, I think, to the left, a big government, big statist type of government. That concerns me, that people can just be swept up into the Steve Bannon camp.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's really amazing to me what is happening to the Democrats. And let's talk about this for a bit. We thought that Barack Obama was going to be the big socialist push because, quite honestly, his wife really believed in it. I think he did, too, but she was a diehard. She believes in that. As it turns out, he was really more about fame and fortune and money and playing the game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Yeah. You now see him and people like Donna Brazile coming out and saying he leached off the party. Now, the reason why I bring up Donna Brazile is because she's always been a party hack.
Right. Yeah.
Just a party hack.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, remember, she was the one who gave the questions to Hillary Clinton before a debate.
Before the CNN debate, because she worked at CNN.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, you want to talk about a party hack. There is no bigger party hack than somebody who gets the questions in advance and then gives them to your candidate. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Okay. So she's now in her new book taking on Barack Obama. And saying, you know, he was bad for the party. He left us in a mess. Mm-hmm. We were broke. We had nothing. So she's not holding him up as a champion. And again, the reason why I do it for her is she's a party hack, but no longer. With this new book, she is now staking her claim into the new left. She's moving over to the Bernie side. So she's cutting the ties, well, because they got them with her, but she's cutting the ties of all of the establishment. But she's lumping Barack Obama into that and not bringing him into the Bernie camp. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, he's seen as, I mean, I guess when you're president for two terms, you're going to seem like the establishment.
Correct.
Right? You know, it's, I think, you know, 30% of Amazon's book sales come from people who are in politics and are writing books about how it wasn't their fault that they lost.
Yes,
like, it's, right. I mean, it is very common to see, but you're right. I think it's identifying those lines of the Civil War.
Yes.
Right. And picking a side.
Yeah. I'm not saying that she's writing an important book and that you should read the book or anything else.
Right.
There's just two things in it that I think are important. One, throwing Barack Obama under the bus. Because she's staking out territory with the new leadership.
He wasn't left enough. That was the problem.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He sold out. The other is the fact that she says in her book, if I can quote here, I felt some responsibility for Seth Rich's death. Stu, what does the family say that happened to Seth Rich?
Botched murder. Not a botched murder. They actually succeeded in that. Sorry, a botched robbery.
Botched robbery. Mm-hmm. So he was just robbed. And when anyone...
And it's not just the family. It's also, you know...
Yeah, I know.
The leading theory.
Right, and I believe that. And anybody on the right who has been saying that, well, no, I don't know. I mean, I think he was killed and they made it look like a robbery. What is the media said?
I mean, it's a conspiracy theorist. I mean, Fox News had to retract stories about that. I mean, it was a big scandal the last 6 months.
And everybody on the left was outraged about these conspiracy theories. Okay. In her book, she writes, I felt some responsibility for Seth Rich's death, I didn't bring him into the DNC, but I helped him. I helped keep him there working on voting rights. With all I knew about the Russian hacking, I could not help but wonder if they had played some part in his unsolved murder. Beside that, racial tensions were so high that summer, I worried that he was murdered for being white on the right side of town. She then goes in and talks about how she, after the murder, she was afraid for her life. Now, this is why this is important, because I'm not going to get into the Seth Rich murder. This is important because, again, all she's trying to do, she doesn't have a job. She's not going to serve in the government anymore with the Democrats. She has discredited herself. She has no job as a political consultant. She has no job as a voice in the future.
No news organization can hire her after she leaked questions to the candidate.
Correct. So she's discredited herself. So we know what she's doing. She's just trying to make herself relevant.
Mm-hmm.
However, how she's making herself relevant is really important.
Yep.
One, Hillary Clinton, bad. Barack Obama, bad. The Democratic Party, corrupt. Socialism and Bernie Sanders, good. And then to add the conspiracy element, she is doing what the left and the media claimed was so damaging to the country, by taking people who believe something and then mixing in the fear of conspiracy theories. And once you do that, this is their hypothesis, and I actually kind of agree with it. Once you start to add the conspiracy theories into it, you start attracting all kinds of crackpots. And then, by any means necessary, becomes real. What is she doing? And why is no one calling her out? Why are they just dismissing after this huge scandal about Fox News and Seth Rich? Why are they silent and not making a huge deal for their own side to now welcome in somebody who is peddling a conspiracy theory?
To me, it
shows how dangerous things are getting.
It's not about what she's saying. It's about her motivations to say them. And you listen, look at the way she's saying all the points you just pointed out. Hillary Clinton is bad. She wasn't liberal enough. The DNC was bad. They didn't embrace the crazy liberal socialist guy enough. Barack Obama was bad. He wasn't liberal enough. You know, I mean, like, these are, it's the same way. You're right. It's a full out embrace of that side of the aisle.
And look what they did. Why do they say that Donald Trump did all of the birth certificate stuff? He did the birth certificate stuff because he knew, this is their claim, he knew that these conspiracy theorists were out there and he was going to appeal to them and bring them into the party. And it's the most dangerous thing that can happen. Why is she doing this? Is she doing this because she knows those people exist and she can bring them into the party? Why is that not even an option? Why is no one even talking about that? It seems rather significant, especially after you look at this, Stu. Okay, so on Monday, just see what are you getting from this? Besides, holy cow, this has been a lot. On Monday, there was a guy who broke into the White House or tried to jump the fence and wanted to, his claim on Facebook was, I'm going to kill all of the white cops. What is that?
Ill-advised?
It's Black Lives Matter influence. Mm-hmm. It's clearly leftist rhetoric and racist rhetoric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sutherland Springs. He looks like he was a really pissed off atheist.
Yep. And yep, with personal vendettas as well.
Yes, personal vendettas and a personal vendetta against Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Rand Paul. He was beat up on Friday, three broken ribs, five ribs, right? Yeah, five ribs, yeah. three separated fractures or something else, three teeth now that are they apparently knocked out.
Bruised lungs.
Mm-hmm. He was really beaten up. He was beaten up by an Occupy Democrat supporter. Antifa on Saturday, by any means necessary, all leftist.
By the way, all next week we have the chalkboard on Antifa going through their history and where they're coming from. You want to see the genesis of that, the history of it, and where they're saying they're going in the future. We'll have that all next week on the TV show, theblaze.com/TV.
If you want to change the narrative from gun control, let's just look at the last week. White House guy takes a gun, wants to kill all of the white cops. That's a leftist. Sutherland Springs, an atheist, left. Rand Paul beaten up by Occupy Wall Street guy, left. Antifa, the left. ISIS, what the left and the right are ignoring. That happened a week ago yesterday.
Feels like 1978,
doesn't it? Then you have the Las Vegas shooting, which the really sick thing about that is it looks like he was only into fame.
They don't know for sure, but that's one of the
working theory now is that he was just trying to be the best shooter of all time. So he was looking for fame. So that's neither side. Then the Nazis. That's the first one on the right.
And it's not, I mean,
yeah, no,
needless
it's a
to
socialist.
Say, it's not on the
it's
right.
A socialist.
Yeah, national socialism.
And the baseball shooting, a guy trying to stop the GOP. So you have the left, the Nazis, socialists, Las Vegas doesn't count because we don't know the motive. It looks like it was fame. ISIS doesn't really count because both sides are ignoring that. Antifa, left. Rand Paul, left. Sutherland Springs, left. White House, left. You want to change the dialogue from guns? Let's look at this list and say, who is sowing the seeds of hatred here? And if you go back to Donna Brazile, why was somebody who was in the DNC worried about a white guy that he may have been killed for being white? Who has been encouraging that, the left or the right? You know, maybe we should have a frank conversation in America, because I think people are missing the point. If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward, but it's also hard to find the right candidate for a job. But now ZipRecruiter is there, and you can post your job to over 100 websites, the leading job boards on the internet, with one click. So you can rest easy that it's everywhere that it should be, but there's an added bonus. ZipRecruiter then takes its smart matching technology to work, and it goes out and it looks for people with those qualifications. And then it notifies those people about your jobs within minutes of posting. So you're going to see the best possible matches because you don't have to wait around for them to see you. You're going out and looking for them. One click. This is why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in one day. It's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Find out now for yourself by doing it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's how you get it free. You go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Do it now. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So... someday we're going to make a tape of all of our, that's crazy. I can't believe we'll just make a tape of all those and run them back to back on all topics and then just separate topics. But this year, the I can't believe that award has to go to Bitcoin.
Yes, I would say that's accurate.
Because last spring, we were like, I can't believe it's $1,100. Today, I can't believe it's 75. What is it?
7523.
7523.
It's amazing. Oh, it's funny. Our own Brad Staggs, who is here on the Blaze TV, we have been trading texts for a year about, holy crap, look at this new price of Bitcoin. And, you know, just I was looking back at one the other day, and he in September was like, you know what? I think this could go to 7,500 by the end of the year. And like we were like, well, I don't even know if it was November when it hit 7,500. We still have 2 months to go. Goldman Sachs is now saying what? 79?
So they're saying short term is 79.41.
I mean, again, I have no idea how long this ride lasts. It may very well, you know, rides that are really
think
exciting and
of
up and down.
The nerds. Think of the nerds that have millions of dollars now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just would have bought it when it was pennies.
Yeah, I mean, it was we were talking about this. Ethereum is another one of these, and I promise not to get too in depth on cryptocurrencies. But if you go back and you look at Ethereum, which is another one, it was $8 at the beginning of the year, and it's now 300. It's been as high as 400. So 8 to 400, 50 times your money. You know, these things are exploding, and you wonder because every chart you'll look at looks like it's the ultimate bubble. That it's going to crash tomorrow and go to zero, and it may.
It may. If here's what's going to stop it, governments. If the governments start to regulate against it, it's going to fall apart, and it will go to zero, and you'll lose all your money. That's why I've said, do not put a lot of money into this. But even if you've missed, you think you've missed Bitcoin, you haven't. It's $7,500, but less than 1% of people are invested in it. How much is it? It's 0.1 or 0.01?
It's 0.1%, I think, of the entire world is invested at a level of $100.
Yeah.
I think it's 0.01%.
Put $100 in Bitcoin. You haven't missed it. If this works, it could go, you know, I don't even know, $100,000 a coin. We had a guest on who said that it was going to go up to $50,000 a coin in the next couple of years, he thought.
Yeah. And eventually $1,000,000 per coin.
Yeah, $1,000,000 a coin. Put $100 in it and forget about it.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So, happy anniversary, America. Happy anniversary. Today, President Trump celebrating 365 days in office. Been an incredibly tremendous year. That's what he promised. Has it been an incredibly tremendous year? Probably not, but there's been some good things that I think we should mention. Trump has made great appointments. Neil Gorsuch, Betsy DeVos, Scott Pruitt. Probably, most people would say, the most impressive accomplishment of the last year is the economic landscape. Under Trump, we have seen a healthy and robust economy come flourishing back from the grave. All three quarters of Trump in office have resulted in a 3% or more of GDP growth, unmatched achievement by any other president in our history. That's significant. The numbers are fantastic when you compare them to the 8 years of Obama's miserable 1.6% average. Unemployment under Donald Trump has gone down to 4.1% as of October's job report released on Friday. That is a 16-year low. Consumer confidence is skyrocketing, hit 125.9 in October, the highest level since December of 2000. The Dow Jones is up 29% since Trump was elected. Now, there's lots of things I could say back and forth on all of them, but you do have to recognize whether you like Donald Trump or you agree with all of these or not, these stats are true. They're hard fast facts. And that's good for America. We still have a long, long way to go. But some really good things have happened last year. And you know what? If the GOP could actually cut the spending and actually reduce the taxes in a meaningful way, we'll have a really, really good 2018 as well. One of the big changes that has happened in the last year, and this is significant, is the destruction of ISIS. We talked about it for a very long time after we created it. We talked about destroying it. This has been the one big change. Donald Trump destroyed it. Now, I highly doubt that ISIS would be destroyed, and I highly doubt our economy would have turned around with Hillary Clinton at the helm. But we'll never know. And by the way, I would like to recognize one other milestone. It's been exactly 1 year today that Hillary lost for the last time.
It's Wednesday, November 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's amazing. I want to talk to you about being for or against something. Do we have that audio, Stu? Who was it that said yesterday that, you know, politics are now changing and it's really important that you are against something? It's no longer what you're for. It's what you're against.
Yeah, it's this proposition of audio. I think we do have it pulled. I haven't heard the clip yet, but if we want to give it a whirl.
Yeah.
All right. It's a CNN clip, Sarah. You should have it from Mike.
What's the challenge? Because, you know, you're going to have to deal with it. When you run, people can look at you and say, you know, your score with Donald Trump is 97.9%. You will be a proxy for President Trump for people in your own district. How do you feel about that proposition?
Look, I agree with a lot of the policies. You know, I believe in our party.
97.9%. Yes, you do.
Yeah. Well, the reality is, look, the Republicans control the House, so the bills that are on the floor are mostly Republican. And if it was Speaker Nancy Pelosi, most of the bills on the floor would be Democrat. So of course my score would be in the opposite. So I think that score is a little bit misleading, but the reality is when we believe in something, we should have no problem standing up and saying so. And if we disagree with something, we should have no problem standing up and saying so.
What do you think happens in the midterms if people in your party who are running for Congress don't start saying what you're saying right now, which is we can't divide anymore? The divisive rhetoric may have gotten us here in terms of having a president from our party, but won't get us where we want to be.
Again, I believe that leadership is bringing people together. I believe in the politics of addition, not subtraction. I think that, you know, I would just encourage my peers to do the same thing, that, you know, dividing people. And listen, let's be realistic here. Democrats are guilty of this as well, too.
So he's making the point here about you got to be for something. And what's happening to us is we're really against things. For instance, let's take ISIS. We've been against ISIS, right? We got to stop ISIS. All right, we did. But what did we do in the meantime? In the meantime, we helped Iran fight ISIS. Now what's happening? Now we have Iran in Iraq and Syria, and it looks like Iran is now positioning itself to go to war with Saudi Arabia. Why did that happen? Well, let me give you a little history lesson quickly. This started, you know, back in the 1970s. We were really against, we were fighting a Cold War. And who were we against, Stu? That Cold War.
The evil Soviets?
The evil Soviet Union. Yeah. So we have to do whatever we can to stop the evil Soviets by any means necessary.
Sure.
Because we're against them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what did we do? When they went into Afghanistan, we built Osama bin Laden. We trained him. We gave him the guns. We gave and armed them and trained them.
Obviously, he was It wasn't Osama bin Laden at that time. There was a real motivation there. It was the enemy of our enemy.
And he hated the Soviets. Yeah. He wanted to kick them out. We wanted them to be kicked out. And so we helped him because we were against the Russians. Once the Russians fell, he said, okay, now I'm going to do that to America. That's almost a quote. So we became, we were against Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, which we were just for with the Russians, but now we were against it. Because we were against it, we decided to get into bed with the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, they're against Al-Qaeda. Okay, all right. Then what happened? Because we were for the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood was starting to fight against Gaddafi, we had to help the people against Gaddafi. So what did we do? We created ISIS, and we armed the people of ISIS. That's what Benghazi was all about. Now we were against ISIS. And so what happens? We have to help Iran. What's missing here? What do you learn from this? You learn without having principles, you're just going to switch problems. You're just going to be against something and you're going to make it worse. And then you have to be against that and you're going to make it worse and you're going to make it worse. And you get nowhere.
Your best case is kicking the can down the road, typically.
Yes. Best case. Worst case is you're entangled in something that just continues to go on and on and on, and you never get out of the cycle. And you can't get out of the cycle because you don't stand for, you're not for something. If we were for freedom, we would not be for or tolerating ISIS, which we did, Al-Qaeda, which we did, the Muslim Brotherhood, which we did, Osama bin Laden, which we did. They stood against the things we should have been for, and they have raised money and soldiers against us because we're duplicitous. We don't stand for anything. Now let's look at this with the GOP. The GOP said that they were for the free market, but they didn't mean it. What they were against was more important. What they were against was Barack Obama, and what they were against, Hillary Clinton, overrode everything else. But we're against Obamacare. That became the mantra. We're against Obamacare, and we're going to repeal and replace. And how many times did I say, with what? Replace? No, you're going to replace it with the free market. But because we didn't demand to hear what they were for, we were all taken like a bunch of hapless dupes. What? They're not going to repeal it? They're not going to give it back to free market? No. Why would they? We never asked them to be for that. We assumed. And we put all of our stock in what they were against. Let's look at gun control. It's happening to us again. We are what? What are we against? I'm against a church being shot up. This is the argument. Do you want that to happen more? No, of course not. Nobody wants that to happen more. And it's a stupid argument to make. It's not that I'm for that. Stop changing the argument. Stop making it an argument of first graders. I'm not for that. Nobody's for that. Well, then how come you're not against? Well, wait, because I want to be for something. And it has to be something that aligns with my principles. For instance, how come you won't join Antifa? You for the fascists? No. No, I'm not. I'm not for the Nazis. However, I know what a fascist is. And what a fascist is somebody who says, I'm going to shut down people who disagree with me by any means necessary. Wait a minute, Antifa, that's your slogan. I can't be for you. Even though I am against the Nazis, I can't be for you because, yes, you might shut down the Nazis, but then I have to fight with you because you believe anyone who disagrees with you, you're going to shut them down by any means necessary. So once you finish with the Nazis, are you going to come for me? I can't be for you. And I can't be against the Nazis with you by my side because I don't agree with you on where we're headed. You want to go into a totalitarian state, which a socialist communist state, which you think is going to bring utopia. Well, the same thing with the Nazis. They think that's going to bring utopia. I don't agree with either of you. I believe everyone has the right to speak and exchange ideas, and we meet on the battlefield of ideas. The minute you make that an actual battlefield, I'm out. The minute you say, I've got to silence somebody, I'm out. The minute you say, they don't have worth to be listened to occupy space, that they don't have a reason to live, that they're somehow or another beneath you, I'm out. Because I'm for something. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back with something that Clarence Thomas asked last week that is so unbelievably profound and sad. Sad that we even have to have that conversation. But he's absolutely right. And it's a conversation that we have to have today. We'll do that in a second. Your mortgage rate depends on many factors like the global economy, the loan that you choose, how many points you pay. Now, these and other variables add cost, and that's, you know, whether you're going to be able to get the loan and be able to afford the loan. Now, the one thing that you really have to look at is the person helping me buy this loan? You've got to look at banks like used car salesmen. They are selling you something. We just trust them because it's a bank. What are you doing? They're selling you something. It's a loan instrument. And they want you to get into that loan because it's good for them. Don't do that. You need to talk to somebody who makes a salary without any bonuses or tied, you know, commissions to whatever the customers buy. This is why I like American Financing. And this is why in 2008, American Financing didn't have any problems. This is a family-owned business that started years ago and now has just grown so well because they work for you. They don't work for the bank. American Financing will give you straightforward and effortless mortgage experiences. So call American Financing today. If you want to refi, you want to buy a new home, call American Financing. 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Tonight at 5 o'clock, I'm going to go deeper into this. I started yesterday on the TV show on what do we have in common? What is our unum? And showed you the problems that we are experiencing right now because we don't have an unum, e pluribus unum, from many one. That was our national motto. We are now e pluribus pluribus, from many, many. It doesn't work. And now we're adding arrogance to it on it's my way or the highway. I can kill you if I don't agree with you. Clarence Thomas said this recently. I want you to listen to this.
When you think of people like my grandparents, these were people who had been through quite a bit and had a calmness and a contentment about life, and they understood putting things in context, what was important, priorities, what battles are you going to fight today, what decisions you're going to make. What decisions you're going to make today will result in you being able to eat, those sorts of things. And long term, that these two boys they were raising will be educated and that they will have good manners and go to school and be polite to the neighbors, etc. I think that today we seem to think that everything has to be one size fits all and people can't have opinions that make us uncomfortable or ideas that make us uncomfortable or that we don't agree with.
I want you to think of that. See, we're changing language. What we used to call uncomfortable, we now call unsafe. I feel unsafe. No, you feel uncomfortable. Unsafe is when somebody comes into the office with a gun. That's when I feel unsafe. I feel unsafe when I go to a theme park and they haven't locked me in. I feel unsafe. I feel uncomfortable when somebody is challenging me. That's huge. Because we can't even promise safety. There's no one that can say to you, you're going to be safe your entire life. Unless you're in a bubble. And even then, there could be a fire. And if you're in a bubble, maybe the oxygen tanks blow up. I mean, I can't promise you safety. No one can. But you should never want to be promised a lack of uncomfortability. I am only uncomfortable when I'm learning something new. For instance, yesterday I was in a meeting and I was very uncomfortable. I was very uncomfortable. But I was very uncomfortable because we were all learning something new. I'd never been there before. Didn't know exactly how to handle it. None of us did. And we were all uncomfortable. But we will be better because we had that moment of uncomfortability. If we didn't have that uncomfortable moment, we would never solve it. It would just decay and get worse and worse and worse. Your kids are uncomfortable doing their homework. They don't like it. You do it because you know it's important. So the first thing that we have to change is the understanding of being unsafe and uncomfortable. If somebody says to you, hey, I like that dress, and would you like to go out? That may make you uncomfortable and say, that makes me uncomfortable. Don't do that anymore. Somebody stalking you is making you unsafe, and they are very different. Learn that first. More in a minute.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. So Clarence Thomas said, a couple of things. And could we play this again, Sarah, please? This is Clarence Thomas.
When you think of people like my grandparents, these were people who had been through quite a bit and had a calmness and a contentment about life. And they understood putting things in context, what was important, priorities.
Okay, stop.
What battles are you?
First of all, I want to start there. What he said here is our grandparents were content. And why? Because they had priorities. They put things in context and they put things, they knew what mattered. This is why I've been on this kick lately in my own life. What matters most? Once you know and you make a list of what matters most, this is what matters most to me. This is where I'm headed. This is what I want to do. Once you start doing that, oh my gosh, your life changes. You suddenly have no tolerance for stuff that just doesn't matter. You just like, you want to have this conversation, go someplace else and have this conversation. I'm working on this. Once we know, Stu, what is the greatest gift from God? What would you say? I thought of this yesterday. What would you say God's greatest gift to us is? Most precious gift?
Probably queso, I would think. I mean, this is a tough
line. That was the first one I thought of, too. Mm-hmm. But now go to the second level.
I mean, obviously, the chips go closely along with it, but I'm kind of putting it in the same category.
All right. Well, I'm going to help you a little. I mean, I bet a lot of people would say, and I've said most of my life, forgiveness.
Grace.
The chance, grace. Yeah. The chance to start all over again is phenomenal, but I don't think that's his greatest gift. Time is our greatest, most precious commodity. Time. And there's a limited amount of it. There's enough grace for the entire universe for all eternity. But time is limited. What are we doing with our time? We are not putting things into order. What matters most? We are so ADD driven. Think of this. Where are we on ISIS today? Talking about what happened in ISIS? We're not talking about it because we're currently talking about guns because of the shooting. Last week, we were all about ISIS. Last week, we got to be all about ISIS. This week, shooting, guns, First Amendment. Next week, it'll be something else. What the hell is wrong with us? We are shiny object.
Yeah, I mean,
squirrel.
If you were super duper into the NFL protests a few weeks ago, I mean, now it feels like ancient history. Was there any purpose in getting all fired up about that? I don't know. I mean, and this goes every single week. There's another one of these stories.
Nope. So first of all, we have to say what matters most for our time, but we have to look at that also as in our society. What matters most? What matters most? And I will tell you that it is not getting rid of ISIS or getting rid of the Nazis or getting rid of Antifa. It's not getting rid of the Democrats or the Republicans. It's not getting rid of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Because another one will appear. Have you ever thought, I'm just not going to watch the news anymore? And you're all keyed up from it. And then you leave and you're like, what have I missed? And you come back and it's the same crap, different names. Have you ever noticed when you read the Bible, it's the same crap, just different names. You're reading this and you're like, did these people not see what happened 500 years before? Did they not see what did? Yes, they didn't see it. We're not seeing it. It's the same story over and over and over again. So what matters most? We could do all kinds of things to get rid of guns. But is that what matters most? We want to get rid of guns because we're against guns. No, I am for security. I am for the defense of the innocent. I am for the defense of the helpless. Now that changes things, because if I'm against guns, I can solve what happened in a petri dish, not actual solve it. I could solve what happened in a petri dish by telling you that I'm going to make sure that gunman on Sunday isn't going to get a gun. Well, he's going to find someplace else. He'll mow a bunch of people down with a truck. And if they're really committed, they'll fly a 747 or a 727 into a building. They'll find a way. That doesn't solve anything. That kicks the can down the road. What matters most is I am for security and safety. I am for a society that doesn't want to rip the throats out of each other. Well, now that's a different problem. That's a totally different problem. That's going to make me now look at the shooter on Sunday and say, we have to look at mental health. we have to look at the divide between Christians and atheists? How can Christians and atheists, what would be better in our country? If we were having a discussion this week about how do we get together with atheists, you know what? See if we can get Penn Jillette on tomorrow. Penn, this guy was an atheist. What can the Christian community do to reach out to atheists and say, we don't want to be those kinds of people, and I know you don't want to be those kinds of people? How can we break down some of these barriers? Wouldn't that do more for the safety of our nation and the calmness of the nation? Wouldn't that make us feel more safe? It's going to make us feel uncomfortable. But if you're not willing to be uncomfortable in thought, what you're saying to the world is, I got it all figured out and it's my way or the highway. And that leads to Nazis, that leads to Antifa, that leads to rounding people up. We have to be four things. I'm going to show you tonight at 5 o'clock. On the Blaze TV, I'm going to take to the chalkboard and I'm going to show you the things that people are saying now that we need to solve. We have to do something. And I'm going to show you that if you are against something, that solution will look really good. That solution will be like, yep, that could take care of it. I'm not going to guarantee it, but that could take care of it. But unless you're for something, and these are really big principles that we should all be for, you will destroy those big principles because you're just going to pick them off one by one without even noticing. I'll show you that tonight on the chalkboard at 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV. Become a subscriber now at the Blaze TV. That's theblaze.com/TV. And you can watch them all. I think it's a buck an episode or something, and you can watch them all. But we just did, last week was all about socialism. This week is kind of turning out to be e pluribus unum. What do we believe that will bring us together? Because if we don't bring ourselves together, we're toast. We're absolutely toast. Can I let me show you? I want to show you one thing. Because I think we're going to have so much tonight that we're just not going to have time for it. So let me show you one example. Right now, we all, would you agree that the one thing we all want to stop is sexual harassment? Right?
Sure.
I don't know anybody who's for that. Well,
Harvey Weinstein.
Okay, so the bad guys are for that.
Kevin Spacey.
Okay, yes, Kevin. Can you play real quick just the Kevin Spacey? There's a show on Hulu. Don't tell me that this Kevin Spacey thing was a secret. This show has targeted for 3 years Kevin Spacey's problem.
Yeah, the show's called Difficult People, and it's on Hulu. Listen to this, this highlights from the past 3 seasons.
The second Bridget asked for a volunteer to come up on stage, his hand shut up faster than Kevin Spacey's fly at the opening of Newsies.
What do kids hate? Jazz?
The dentist. Homework.
Kevin Spacey. And yes, many gay lives were spared in the process. I don't know how many, you know.
Well, we'd have to ask Kevin Spacey, sure.
Yeah. Well, this is Choking Chucky.
Choking Chucky by day, maybe. Kevin Spacey's pool boy by night.
So maybe I should just give up trying to find love. You know, I'm going to go the Kevin Spacey route. Just stop trying to be a human being and just focus on getting famous. And then after I have a Netflix show, focus all of my frustrations on a boyfriend young enough to be my own son.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Wow. Don't tell me this was unknown. Wow. That was on Hulu. Wow. Over 3 years. This is all stuff prior to this coming out.
Yeah. That's important to note. It's not like they're reacting to the scandal. This has been they've been putting these jokes on the air for 3 years.
Okay, so let's talk about, I mean, because this is, you know, this stuff is different and some of the stuff with Harvey Weinstein is different because it's rape. But let's talk about, you know, just sexual harassment in the workplace. Okay, so we all agree we want to stop that. Okay, So then you can't legislate anything. So the answer has been, well, let's publicly shame. Let's shame them. And that's really the way society should work is, you know, you shame people. However, things have gotten so out of whack because we haven't looked at the big picture because it's all happened so fast and the world has changed because of social media. Society should shame. Okay. So I make a claim, you know, B. Arthur sexually harassed me back in the 1940s. I make that claim and all of a sudden B. Arthur, well, she's no longer working, but if she would have been working, she loses her job and everybody says, B. Arthur, that's bad. What have we lost? We have lost a potential sexual harasser. We have empowered the victim. If it is a victim, what we've lost is the biggest principle of our society, and that is due process. Without due process, it's a witch hunt, which if I could say, hey, anybody want to go round up people I think are witches? Anybody want to join me and round up people I think are bad people? And we'll be the judge and jury and executioner. I'm not going to get anybody but crazy people to do that. But we're all doing that through social media. And we haven't noticed the death of due process, which is a fundamental American principle. We're a mob.
Yeah, I mean, and it is most of the time going to be probably right. I think most of the time these accusations turn out to be against real terrible people. But there's a reason we structured...
At the beginning.
Especially at the beginning. There's a reason we structured our legal system, innocent until proven guilty, and not guilty until proven innocent. And you know what? If it was guilty until proven innocent, most of the time, we'd still get it right. The question is, the issue and the thing that the founders put in there was to make it so it was difficult to even get people who were guilty to be proven guilty. You put the standard as a high one so that when you always erred on saying, you know what, we don't have enough, they're innocent.
Yeah,
and we're going the opposite way on that.
We didn't want to be a society like all other societies before us that were putting innocent people in jail. We still say we put innocent people in jail with the high standard that we have. We still make mistakes and we still have prejudice in us that makes us, you know, think in different ways. Okay, we don't like that. So what are we doing? Instead of making it more difficult to be proven guilty, we are making it less difficult by cutting out the judicial system entirely and saying vigilante justice, the mob justice. And we will destroy you, your life, your reputation, everything that you are through mob justice. Now, personally, I know some people that are that I think are guilty and some people who aren't firsthand. Do you want to be somebody who destroys someone's life just by joining a hashtag group? Due process. We must be for things, not just against them. If you want to protect your home this holiday season, listen up. Right now, you can have access to Simply Safe's biggest Black Friday sale ever before Black Friday. This is $200 off Simply Safe's holiday security system. $200 off. I don't think I've ever seen them do a $200 sale. Have you? I mean, these things are really not that expensive. This is the bestseller 13-piece arsenal that covers your whole home. If you want to protect your family, you want to protect your home, Simply Safe has made everything about security absolutely effortless. You barely have to lift a finger. You can order it online, delivered right to your door with free shipping. It takes less than an hour to set it up. My 10-year-old or my 13-year-old son could set it up. In fact, he would probably do a better job than me. Simply Safe has no long-term contracts, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees. The prices are honest. They're fair. $15 a month for the best in-industry alarm monitoring 24/7. And with Simply Safe, you're never locked in. Right now, Save $200 before it disappears on November 13th. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. We are having a big fundraiser for Mercury One, and we would love your help with this. The Mercury One ball is happening on November 18th. You can still grab tickets. A lot of people are going to be there. We're all going to be there, and I'd love to see you. Go to mercuryone.org/M1ball. And also buy your raffle tickets. You could win a brand new truck. You don't have to be there to win.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So how is it possible to pass five background checks even after you have been in prison for assault? Disturbing details continue to emerge about the man who murdered 26 people at Sutherland Springs First Baptist Church last Sunday. The latest is that while he was in the Air Force in 2012, he made death threats against his superior officers who tried to, and he tried to sneak guns onto Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. He was then sent to a mental health facility. He later escaped. Police caught him at a bus terminal in El Paso. Police said that at the time he was suffering from mental disorders and was a danger to himself and others. Now, this apparently happened at the same time that he was facing charges for kicking, choking, and hitting his wife, pulling her hair, and pointing loaded guns at her in 2011 and 2012. He also hit his infant stepson in the head, fracturing the child's skull, and he was quoted as saying he did it intentionally. I don't think I understand military justice. He was only sentenced to 1 year in a military prison for punching a baby alone? According to his court-martial documents, the assault was with a force likely to produce death or grievous bodily harm. Isn't that attempted murder? The Air Force admitted on Monday that his conviction was not entered into the National Criminal Information Center database. Someone was not doing their job. Had someone done his job, we wouldn't be in the situation in Sutherland Springs. In the 2 years following his military prison term, he was also investigated twice for sexual assault and rape, although no charges were ever filed. Despite all of that, he still passed at least five background checks after his assault conviction because somebody didn't do their job. He got one to work at a grocery store. And then he passed another one, two more in 2016 and 2017. He purchased guns at Academy Sports, and then two more within the last 4 months to get a security job at a water park and an RV resort. So who's doing these background checks? This isn't like applying for a library card. He was getting full-time jobs. Okay, one step up from a library card, but he was buying firearms. What's going on? When we have a background check law in place that completely fails, it only emboldens the left to try to pass more laws. Anyone who believes in the Second Amendment must be now controlling the narrative and asking the Air Force what happened, who's responsible, and what are you doing to make sure that lunatics, that domestic violence, and what I believe was attempted murder should not get a year in prison and then have it wiped from the public record. America needs to get its act together with the laws we already have in place, or we will lose more of our freedoms.
It's Wednesday, November 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Last week, I saw a story on the Daily Wire, and it was about an imam in Australia, Imam Tahidi. And this imam said, I have contacted or tried to contact Mayor de Blasio several times over the last few years. And I am trying to reach out to mayors all over the country because radical Islam is being taught in many of the mosques here in America. This is the letter that he wrote on February 2016 to Mayor de Blasio. Dear Mayor de Blasio, it is my pleasure to address you in this letter, and I hope it finds you in the best statuses of health and high levels of happiness. I've spent the last 2 weeks in New York, both meeting and working with the Muslim community and its leaders. I am writing to inform you that a number of Islamic centers and organizations, which I believe are responsible for radicalizing Muslim youth, are within your local government. I am aware that the tactics being applied in these organizations include details of their financial funding from the Middle East and importing of books containing extremist Wahhabist fundamentalist teachings. These books are being gifted to prisoners within New York, resulting in their radicalization in prison. I have met with U.S. ambassadors and diplomatic missions in the past, and I welcome the opportunity to meet with you regarding the growth of Islamic extremism in the U.S. in general and specifically in New York. From Australia, joining us now, Imam Tahidi.
I sent two letters, and I assume the one you read was the 2016 one, February of 2016.
Yes.
And I sent another letter in January of 2017, following up that letter, basically because I was in New York a year later, and I thought that now would be also a good time to bring some attention to the mayor. Now, I sent the letter through all means possible. I sent it through the website, through the City Hall website. I sent it through the postal address provided on the website. I even contacted the number available there to his secretary, receptionist of his office, and made sure that they had received the letter. I even sent one of my employees that was accompanying me to go and send a letter in person. So, and this is not the first time that I've, sent letters to mayors. I've been doing this for a long time in many countries, and I received positive response.
So,
but sadly, New York wasn't interested in the advice I had to give.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, basically, it's not part of his agenda. It's not part of his. It's not something that he shows that he's very concerned about, the security of the state, the city. Now, let me be very clear with you. We cannot compare mayor of New York with the mayor of another city in America. It doesn't work like that. New York is probably one of the most important places on earth after Washington, D.C. and London and so on. This will always be a hotbed and a target for Islamic terrorism. It's something I know. I know the ideology of my co-religionists. I know how they think. And it's always been a target, 9/11 and so on recently. But when you have a mayor that's very calm when it comes to radical Islam, that's very open, very soft, you know, he will say that, you know, we're doing work, but it's not really him that's doing work. It's the FBI, it's the intelligence services. You know, it's something very worrying, especially to people from Australia. And you would wonder why I would be worried. That's basically because whatever happens in America influences the globe. Therefore, I sent the letter.
Tell me what is happening in our country that Americans should be aware of.
I travel to America frequently, and I have a very healthy relationship with American ambassadors in the Arabian Gulf. Now, the problem that we find is taking place in America is the lack of understanding when it comes to dealing with Islamic terrorism. Now, let's be very frank over here. Mayor de Blasio, he enjoys a very healthy relationship, maintains a healthy relationship with the Muslim community, and with activists such as Linda Sarsour and so on. Now, I don't want to speak about the funding part of it. I just want to shed light on having a good relationship with the Muslim community. That in itself does not mean that you can control the Muslim extremists that want to conduct terrorist attacks. If you're good with a mosque, it doesn't mean that you control the congregation of the mosque. That doesn't mean anything. The fact is, in the eyes of a Muslim, so I'm a Muslim imam, in the eyes of the Muslim community, if a mayor is good with the Muslim leader or a Muslim figure, that adds credibility to the Muslim mosque. And most of these mosques are actually radicals, and which is why I sent the letter. Most of them are radicals. And there's been studies that have been done available online by intelligence services regarding the Saudi Arabian funding to these mosques. The number of terrorists that used to attend these mosques, people that have joined ISIS that used to pray in these mosques. And, you know, the mayors over there, they have a good relationship with the people in the mosque. That's the problem right now that America is suffering from.
But we don't know which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones. We don't even know how to tell as citizens. We have no idea.
I don't blame you for that, because sometimes even Muslims in Muslim authorities can't tell between the radical and the non-radicalized person, let alone a non-Muslim trying to tell the difference. This is a serious problem. I hold a certificate in counterterrorism studies from Georgetown University. When I sent my letter to the mayor, I knew exactly what I was speaking about. I am a third-generation imam. I'm very well experienced in this field. I collaborate with the Australian authorities regarding these matters. There's a huge opportunity to save America, especially during the Trump administration. Now is the perfect time to crack down on terrorists. What is needed is the people to actually rise and demand the mayors to actually take action. And I speak to officials. I don't just sit with anyone. I have my relations over there. And the imams in New York can't really do much because they live there. They fear for their job. They fear for their income. I'm a guest. You can take my advice, see if it benefits you. If it doesn't, then I'm just going to be on my way back to Australia. I don't want money. I don't want anything. I just want to give you free and friendly advice. But the mayor wasn't really welcoming that.
I spoke to the imam last night because of the time difference. And in the next segment, he started talking about, I can go to the streets of New York and I can show you this. I can show you who and what they're saying. We're going to take him up on that order, on that offer. More in just a second with Imam Tahidi. I just followed him on my Twitter feed. You might want to consider doing the same thing. All right. Our sponsor this half hour is Upside.com. Upside.com is a great service that if you are looking to do some business travel, they're going to give you a win every single time. Upside.com is cutting down the time that it takes for you to be able to even plan your travel, plus saving you a ton of money. They have the best available prices on flights, cars, hotels, and then they reward you for even saving more money for the company with a gift card to places like Amazon every time you buy a business trip. So the company saves money, you get a gift card from Amazon, and the companies that are part of this win. Everybody wins in this. This is the only time I've ever seen a real true win-win-win all the way around. Upside has an amazing 6-star treatment from customer service. They call navigators. They will make sure that everything is right, and they are available for you 24 hours a day. All you have to do is go to Upside.com. Upside.com. You use the promo code Beck, and you're going to get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. But you have to use the promo code Beck for a minimum of $100 gift card when you buy your next business trip at Upside.com. You deserve a better business trip. You deserve, your time is valuable. They will help you save time, money, and make money. Minimum purchases required. See site for complete details. It is Upside.com. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Continuing our conversation with a influential imam in Australia who is begging the United States and in particular New York City and Mayor de Blasio to listen to him, because the people of the mosques in New York are saying, help us. There are radicals here. Imam, welcome back, Imam Tahidi.
Thank you.
What is the motive to not respond to you?
Well, I have to acknowledge that I did not receive any confirmation from the mayor that he received my letter, because the way the system works is that when you send a letter through the website or postal or even in person,
sure,
Nobody confirms with you that you've received,
okay,
that they've received your letter.
Let's go here. If Glenn Beck in Texas can hear about it and get you on the phone, surely the mayor of New York did. So
There's been no approach whatsoever at all.
Has there been any approach from the New York Times or the New York Post? The Daily News.
Nothing. Nobody has contacted me from any of the news agencies that you just mentioned. And you're probably the only person that is concerned about this matter right now, other than the public. But, you know, it's very sad. I can come to New York. All I need is the green light. And I will provide a list to the mayor of the people that shouldn't be entering America at all, especially through New York Airport. I will give him a history of the Islamic centers, the problem there, and I want nothing in return. I just want to help the people over there, and I come back, you know, to my office in Australia. This is something I can offer, but I've been shut down, and it's not going to stop over here. I'm actually going to come to New York. And I'm going to conduct my own research, and I will provide it publicly to the mayor, and we'll follow up. We'll see what he's planning to do.
This is really good news, if I understand you right. Some of your sources are people, American Muslims, that are attending these mosques that are begging you help. Is that true?
Yeah, not one or two. This happens around the world as well. I have people everywhere, and America especially. I can easily point out the mosque and the problem, and if we like, we can easily go inside with a spy camera. They will have no idea who's doing it, because many people come. We can go and we'll translate the lectures for you. And in fact, there are many agencies right now, like Memory, that are doing this. They're uncovering the truth about these matters. But you have real channels that are concerned about real news that use those clips, and there are those like CNN and so on that will never broadcast the things that are being exposed from within the radical communities in America.
What is your life like, you know, being this outspoken? How much danger are you in?
Those who watch YouTube videos about me will see that when I walk on the street with my bodyguards, with my security cameras on me, you'll find people spitting at me, wanting to attack me in the middle of the street. This is in Sydney. So I moved to Adelaide because it's a lot smaller and quieter here. But even last Ramadan, we were attacked and ambushed in a restaurant. Muslim leaders here invited me for a meeting, and they said, we want to discuss some of your statements on the media. This was in March this year. I attended. They ambushed me. They assaulted me. And within the meeting, it turned into an interrogation rather than just a discussion. And I refuse to stay silent. Australian authorities are really good when it comes to taking control over violence and especially terrorism. They're really good with that. I commend them on that. But you really can't control radicalization in mosques. You can't. You can't stop an imam from speaking. He believes it's free speech and the child has emotions. And we had a 15-year-old. This is why it's important. We had a 15-year-old called Fahad Jabbar, went out after listening to two Friday sermons, two Friday prayers in a mosque, 45 minutes each. He acquired a gun and he killed a police officer in front of a police station, a 15-year-old. So we're dealing with a very serious situation over here. And what's happening in New York will happen again and again. We pray that it doesn't, but this is the way the world is going right now. unless the mayor actually steps up and does something, this is not going to change anytime soon.
Imam Tahidi, thank you very much. We pray for you and we wish you the best, and remain standing. It will be people like you that will that will set millions upon millions of people free that believe in Muhammad, but want to live a decent, honorable, and peaceful life. And I wish you the best. We are going to further our conversations with him, and I'd like to bring him to the United States and have our cameras follow him and see what he can show us that some people apparently just do not want us to see. More in a minute.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So we brought Pat from Pat Gray Unleashed, which follows this program on the Blaze Radio Network, which you can listen to for free. Pat, I'm a little puzzled why I have not heard from this imam in the New York Times, the New York Post, the New York any news.
I don't understand that. That's what we've been screaming about for years.
For years.
Where are the moderate Muslims? Where are the peaceful Muslims?
And we have found a few of them. Zudi Jasser is one. Riaz Patel is one.
This is the first imam I think I've heard of.
Well, we had one. Remember, we had one when we were in Jerusalem. And he was going to come to our, you know, standing with courage thing. And they said, your whole family will be dead before you leave the stage if you go. And so he just stayed at home.
Kind of a deterrent.
But he did not pull back his endorsement.
Yeah.
So, but other than
him. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to cover that. I don't understand why you wouldn't follow up on that.
Doesn't fit the narrative. Doesn't fit the narrative that there are no radicalized mosques. Doesn't fit the narrative that New York is doing everything they can. Doesn't fit the narrative that, you know, you can be a Islamic mosque getting money from Saudi Arabia, pushing books of Wahhabism, and still be okay.
Yeah.
So I just find this incredible.
Well, then the attacks are going to continue. You know, if you're not going to listen to guys like this, this is a gold mine of information.
A gold mine.
Where he said it's not just one or two people in the mosque.
What's amazing,
who are telling him about these radicals.
This is a double whammy. This is a moderate imam who is saying, I want to help America.
Yeah.
I want to help. You're on the right track. I want to help. So there's the first one that we've been looking for. And who are his sources? The people
in the mosque.
In the mosques, the Muslims who are like, you guys don't know what's going on. You don't speak the language. You don't know what's going on. They're hiding this from you. Please help us.
I mean, and the like, his standard of what he wants is so low. Hear me out. I'll fly there on my own dime. Hear me out.
And he's not looking for anything in
he's
return.
He's not looking for anything in return. He's
wants to save lives.
If you think it's nonsense, if you think it's nothing, then move on with your lives.
Yeah.
You know, but move on with lives. Instead of, you know, the lack of life, which is kind of the big focus here.
This guy is, I can't believe he's still walking around and he's still alive, for one, because he's still in the faith. And that is remarkable in and of itself. And the stuff on him is, you know, from Islam, not good. Just not good.
A lot of threats. And
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not good. Not good. And I will bet that if this guy takes root, you will see CARE and everybody else start to tear this guy apart.
Well, I mean, look, our special interest groups are busy going after the real enemies in this culture. And like, you know, the national anthem, for example. There's something where we can actually...
You know what? I am so glad you brought that up because I'm still pissed about that.
Yes!
Yes!
You do? Have you heard it?
No, it's racist.
It's thank you.
And fortunately, the California chapter of the NAACP is pointing it out, and they're insisting that the Congress in California change the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they want the U.S. Congress to change the national anthem.
To what?
It's they call the song one of the most racist, pro-slavery, anti-black songs in the American lexicon. I agree.
Because how many times is the word black in the national anthem?
Hireling too many to hireling even count. Or slave.
What?
Yeah, it's the,
hireling or slave.
It's the third verse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are 863 verses in the song. If you ever sang it all, it would take 16 weeks to
it's
actually
real.
Finish.
There's actually there's actually five verses. Usually only four are printed, but the fifth verse was written by Oliver Wendell Holmes, which is all about the blood of the Civil War freeing the slaves.
Yeah, that wasn't, yes, that was afterwards.
That was like 1862.
But this, it says, their blood has washed out their foul footsteps pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. So that's thought to be a reference to slaves in the War of 1812 who sided with the British. You know, they wanted freedom. But Francis Scott Key apparently took exception to that. So, you know, that one line, which is never sung, and I don't think anybody even knows about, is, I guess, perceived as racist.
Okay, so drop the third verse and replace it with the fifth.
Which, yes.
The fifth verse, the fifth verse is great
on
freedom of slaves.
May I suggest something that might even be more to their liking? Since this began as a protest on the police, what about NWA's classic song, F the Police?
Oh, that's...
With the poignant lyrics. A young N-word on the warpath, and when I'm finished, it's going to be a bloodbath of cops dying in L.A. Yo, Dre, I got something to say. F the Police.
Wow.
F the Police.
I almost overwhelmed with the patriotism. Police.
Stop it. Stop it. Beautiful? Stop it. Could you read that last line again, please? Now, I want you to imagine.
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Don't say anything, Stu. I want you to to imagine. Close your eyes and really think about this. Now, go ahead.
Because you're right.
Read it again. Read it again.
When he talked over it, it lessened the impact.
Let me paint the picture for you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me go back to Yo Dre, I got something to say. F the Police. F the Police. F the Police. F the Police.
Play ball!
Is that not poignant and beautiful? There won't be a dry eye in this stadium.
Not
a dry eye.
I'm with you, Pat. I am with you.
Wow. I mean, implement it right
You're
now.
You're welcome.
Implement it right now.
You're welcome.
Hey, wait. I got to get your comments on this.
All right.
Student versus teacher audio, please. I think this came yesterday.
I love this.
This is a teacher trying to tell the student that they are wrong about the definition of terrorism. The teacher is incorrect. And what the teacher says about the dictionary towards the end is unbelievable. If this teacher were teaching my kids... And I don't care if it was about the definition of something that wasn't being politically charged. It was just about, and I had tape, I would right now be saying, you must fire this teacher. Mm-hmm. Just the sheer arrogance. But listen to the insanity.
It's not a terrorist attack when there's no political aim. A terrorist attack when you commit violence to further a political goal.
You're wrong. Terrorism does not have to have a political agenda.
That's literally the definition. Google the definition, Xavier. When you use violence to further a political aim, that is the definition of terrorism. That is the definition of terrorism. Are you just going to do what the alt-right does? It's everyone else's fault, everyone else's fault, it's everyone else's fault. That's what the alt-right does.
Terrorism means... You can be a white man who is a terrorist. There is domestic terrorism.
Yes, obviously.
That's brilliant.
No one denies that. No one denies that. Yeah, but they have a political aim. The Vegas shooter had, as far as we know, no political aim. Terrorism. The unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians, in the pursuit of political aims. The Vegas shooter, as far as we know, unless something comes out,
not necessarily.
You're not smarter than the dictionary.
Yes, I am. I bet you I am. Yeah, you know, I'm a highly intelligent woman.
You're smarter than Merriam-Webster. You're smarter than Merriam-Webster Dictionary. You're smarter than Merriam. Whoa.
Yeah, that's a 12th. That's 12th grade English. This is 12th grade English class. By the way, in case you aren't watching the show, you're just listening to it, that's not a white kid. That is either an Arab kid or a Hispanic kid. That's not a white kid.
Right.
What's the deal here? This is the kind of indoctrination. And once your kids are smart enough to push back, they will win.
Yeah.
We have to be smart enough to make the logical case, because nobody's ever pushed back against these people. And then they start to have to say things like, I'm smarter than the dictionary. Okay.
That's amazing. By the way, if you think that's some right-wing talking point on the definition of terrorism, obviously he cited the dictionary. But listen to this. This is Chris Cuomo on
his
show.
Who is smarter than the dictionary.
Now, he's definitely smarter than the dictionary. We know that for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But listen to him the other day talking about terrorism.
One of the things that winds up being prickly here is how we define it. People will say, well, when the brown guy did it in New York City, it's terror. But when the white guy does it, it's not. People misunderstand, I think, the contextual relationship between the word terrorism and investigations. Mm-hmm. I've asked you this before. I'm asking you again now. What does it take for something to be terror to investigators?
Pretty straightforward. If he's motivated by a political motivation, that is, he's protesting, for example, U.S. engagement in Iraq or Syria, he's protesting racial issues in the United States, which is political, that goes into terrorism. If he's simply angry because of something that's happened in his life, maybe similar to what we saw in Las Vegas, that's not terror. That's simple violence, and that's insanity. I'm guessing in this case, we're going to find that he, as the president has suggested, had some mental health issues. That doesn't necessarily take me to terror.
I mean, people, I think, confuse who does it with why they do it, and you guys are focused on why it's done and how you can make that manifest in terms of agenda.
So I hate to break it to the 12th grade teacher, but even most likely your god of Chris Cuomo at CNN would agree with the dictionary that maybe perhaps you're not as smart as Merriam-Webster.
As smart as Merriam, but not Webster.
I believe that agreeing with Chris Cuomo is also a sign that the fourth horseman of the apocalypse is saddling up and getting ready to ride through town.
Oh, so I'm looking for wormwood in my telescope tonight. Thanks, Pat.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and Television Networks. Coming up in just a few moments. You can get the podcast as well on demand anytime. Blaze.com/TV or Blaze.com/radio.
Okay, I got to talk to you a little bit about LifeLock. Do you remember? I mean, I've done LifeLock commercials for a long, long time. And I've had LifeLock for a long time. But a lot of times, you know, when it first started, I remember the guy, because I'm pretty sure this is the company that had the CEO that was like, here is my Social Security number. And we were giving our Social Security number out like water. Everybody was. You know, we didn't even think about it in the time. And then LifeLock came around and you're kind of like, oh, Social Security number. But then you never really thought, okay, well, somebody's going to steal something from me. I don't have anything to steal. The world has completely changed. And if you don't understand that your life can be turned upside down and that there are, for instance, Russian hackers that are trying to go and get everybody's information, because once they have your identity, you know, your date of birth, your Social Security, and just a couple of pieces of information, you're toast. They can commit crimes. They can steal from you, but commit crimes in your name, all kinds of stuff. And our children are really vulnerable because they won't find it until they go to apply for their first job. Somebody's been posing as them online in the virtual world for 15 years. Now is the time to get
protection. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, they have a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist that will work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions, but LifeLock is the best. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code Beck. That's Beck for a 10% membership, 10% discount off of your membership now at LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck and save 10%. LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
By the way, the president is going to China today, and I have to tell you, the speech that he gave yesterday is making a lot of people nervous. And quite honestly, I mean, I just don't know with him. And that is actually good. I've said for a while, we kind of want our enemies. I'd prefer not our own countrymen, but I prefer our enemies to look at the president and go, I'm not sure he just might do that. What President Trump has done in China or on his Asian trip so far is he has spoken some really tough words over there. And I think he's going into China holding all the cards, because I don't think they know if he would just go to war with North Korea or not. And they don't want that. I think this could be Donald Trump may be on track with North Korea to do what Ronald Reagan did with the Berlin Wall. Say crazy stuff. Their evil empire, they're going to be destroyed. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Everything he was told not to say, they believed him. And they thought he was going to do it. And so they responded and it all came crashing down. I think Donald Trump, if he is playing this game, this may be the best thing that he can do for the nation, and maybe the biggest thing he's done or will do for the United States of America. Either that or he's just crazy.
The two. Hopefully that's not it.
No, yeah, I don't think it is. He's playing it really well.
It's been a year.
I know.
Today is a year anniversary of election night. And, you know, you could still, if you were a betting man 1 year ago and went on a betting website right at this moment, you could have been given 5.5-1 odds for Donald Trump to win the presidency. That's how unlikely it was. And you could say, oh, I knew it was going to happen. Well, you should have taken advantage of it then, because if you knew, you could have cleaned up because it 5.5-1 on election day, while votes are being cast, while exit polls are coming out. And he wound up winning, obviously, in probably the most stunning upset, with the exception of if you're in the Trump family, of really any election in modern times.
And in some ways, it's been a better year than I expected, and in some ways a worse year than I expected. But that, the worst part, is because of the dynamics of all of it. How people are reacting, what he's doing.
Glenn Beck.
All of it.